Juliet Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello and welcome to episode 280 of Dogcast Radio. You can find this and all our podcasts at our website, dogcastradio.com. Later, we'll be hearing from Rachel Rogers, who together with her dog Rico was on the trail of an escaped capybara.
We started man trailing originally just for fun, and then it kind of went down the lines of pet trailing, which is, I think, a little bit rarer in the UK. There's quite a few man trail type organisations. We started with pet trailing, and then I kind of ended up making my entire career because I just loved it so much.
Yeah.
And he, bless him, has always come alongside with me, but usually looking for missing dogs, not capybaras.
Before that, I'm talking to Erica Sinner about pet bereavement leave. Erica had always provided pet bereavement leave for her employees and knew she'd done the right thing when she herself needed it after unexpectedly losing one of her dogs and facing serious health issues with another dog.
Hi, Erica.
Hi, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Lovely to have you. Now, we're going to talk, I think, about a very important issue, and obviously you do too, grief. And some of the information you've given me is background. Oh my goodness. So grief is not limited to human loss. We know this. But research shows that over half of American pet owners agree that their soulmate is their pet. Our pets, in these unexpected, unpredictable times, our pets are like our anchor, aren't they? They just keep us sane. So when we lose our pet, it's a huge loss. And yet we don't sort of, we haven't normalised that loss. And some people, if they're not pet lovers, they don't know how to react to us. This is your speciality. So you are a CEO and founder and author. And pet, you say pet bereavement leave policy can mitigate the shame individuals feel about asking for time off when a pet passes and promote a work culture that is empathetic and values vulnerability. Love it. We'll unpack a lot of that as we go along. You're a catalyst for change in the realm of empathy at work. Goodness knows we need that. What I wanted to get to, first of all, I always want to start talking about the dogs. So like your own sort of catalyst, if you like, was your dogs. And yeah. 2023 sounds an awful year for you because your Sharpei, you'd lost your Sharpei Kingston, and then your other dog, Edmund, is diagnosed with cancer. Now, obviously, this is a really tough subject to ask you to talk about, but I'm really sorry about that. But Erica, can you tell us about how 2023 was for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for asking. I think when you go through grief and this topic alone, being able to talk about it is one of the things that I think all of us need to do more of, is really talk about the animals that we've lost. And, you know, as I've been doing this work, some of the comments that I get on my social medias or emails, there's still grief and longing for an animal they may have lost 8 years ago, 10 years ago. So I love that you asked, and I'm happy to talk about Kingston. Kingston was such a light. He was my husband and I's first dog. So we chose not to have human kids. So our kids are our kids, they're our dogs. And so he came down with heart cancer last year. We had about a week's notice. It was a really hard week. When I founded my company, I'd always had pet bereavement leave, but gosh, I didn't know how bad I was really going to need it. And so we lost him on May 22nd. And then 21 days later, Edmund went in for an x-ray for his leg. They suspected arthritis and they weren't sure if there was a hip issue, and they found melanoma cancer on his tongue. And so the summer was really hard. It was a lot of surgeries, x-rays, chemo, radiation, all of the things. But I'm so happy to report we got to keep Edmund.
Yay.
An incredible job. Yes.
Yeah.
He's still with us.
Brilliant. That's excellent. But it's so worrying, that time when there's uncertainty, and it hits you hard when your dog or pet isn't well. It really is a horrible thing to go through. I think they do sit in that place in your heart where your children sit. I really do. Yeah.
I think they crawl into a place of your heart that we don't allow or trust any human being into. I think it's unconditional love that you have with your animal. I also really believe you have a different relationship with every animal that you have, in the same way that human beings, some of them you have your best friends, and then you have your family, and then you have acquaintances, but there's some relationships that just really matter so much. And I feel like, I have a very different relationship with each of our dogs. And Kingston was, I've learned this term as I've been talking more about my animals, of soul dogs. And yeah. So he was my soul dog.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard them called heart dogs. Yeah.
Heart dog. Yeah. That's...
Yes. Yeah. I know what you mean. So, some you just, like, as you say, people are different. Dogs are different. Cats are that's different. Right. You know, rabbits
different
are different.
Personalities. Yes.
Yeah. 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 And they're all wonderful, but just some are better fits with us somehow.
That's right.
Yeah. 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 But, yeah. Losing them all is a wrench. And yep. One of the things I know you champion, understanding and catering to diverse grieving experiences. Now,
yeah,
I think that's really important because some people I know sort of have had one dog, lost that dog, been heartbroken, never want to do it again. Mm-hmm. I had a time when I was like, I don't want to do this again because it was such a... It was brutal. I always think it was just brutal losing Buddy. And I was like, I don't want to sign up for that again. Other people that I've known have lost a dog, a beloved dog, and almost immediately gone out and got another dog. And I think only you know what will be balm for your soul and what will get you through it. And we have to honor that, don't we?
Yes, we do. And I think it's a different process for everyone. My only advice is, you know, make sure that when you're deciding to open your heart, that it's truly to start a new relationship, right? For us, it took us a year before we brought in another puppy into our life. So now we're in the midst of puppy chaos.
Me too. It's wonderful and awful, isn't it?
Yes, yes. Yes, yes. But I also know if I lived alone and I only had my animal that if I was a pet guardian, you know, I call my kids kids, but not everyone says these are my sons and daughters. They also feel like they're, you know, you're still a guardian over a life, that there's a really big hole that's missing when you do lose them in terms of routines. And I talk about it in my book where my whole house kind of felt like a death trap. I would look around and you don't know which memory is going to punch you in the stomach and say like, oh gosh, I miss him so much.
Yeah.
Whether it's his favorite, you know, place to sit or sleep or where he would snore. But yeah, I think it's everyone grieves differently. And I also think at work too, you know, why I'm championing for organizations to add pet bereavement leave is because there is stigma associated. I think it's hard for us to talk about, and you almost have to feel like you're asking for permission and to somebody else to say, like, I am this upset. I am grieving this much. But also for everyone, it's they want to get back to work and they want to be distracted. And so by having a policy in black and white that says, we acknowledge this pain, we acknowledge this is your family structure, and it's up to the employee to decide, do you want to take advantage of it or not? But if you do, it's here and we know that you're hurting.
Yeah, yeah. And I think sometimes you can be surprised by your reaction because I remember within one or two days, we'd lost Buddy and I was supposed to be going out to do some PR work. And the lady I was working for said, you don't have to go. And I said, no, I actually want to because I want to. I'm just going around in circles and sort of beating myself up and just that horrible early grief. And
I
was like, no, I need to go out and I need to talk to people and I need to be distracted.
Yeah. But I, to your point though, I was also very surprised by how I was feeling. I talk about this too in my book around just this idea. I mean, my company helps pharmaceutical companies bring really important medications to market. And so I'm always thinking about healthcare and advocating for yourself and mental health and just how we care for our bodies. And here I'm having an experience where I am truly grieving. I'm sobbing uncontrollably. I'm feeling fatigued. I mean, there's so many emotions around the grief. And yet I still was thinking, gosh, is something wrong with me? Is this normal? Like, am I this upset? And the answer is yes. Yes, I am. And it is okay to go to your doctor. It is okay to see a therapist. Mental health is health, right? And I think that was also really important for me on why talking about this publicly, but also, I mean, I still see my therapist. It introduced a whole new world for me. And it's been really helpful to just talk about him and honor him more.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, saying about having had a puppy, I lost Buddy in 2018. And I thought, you know, well, 6 years, I have thought things through. I've processed the grief. And I knew it still hit me sometimes like an emotional truck kind of thing. But having the puppy has stirred up things that I sort of thought, I really haven't processed. And I think maybe I'll never get over some aspects of it because I'll always mourn him, you know, but it, as you say, it just hits you like a truck sometimes. And you're just like, where did that come from? And you know, you think you're doing better and you have better days and better times, but I think it always has the chance to hit you. And also saying that, it's one thing to sit here calmly and coolly and say, yeah, you have the right to your grief, and losing a pet is a huge thing. I can remember being gripped by grief and actually thinking the words and going, do I have the right to be this upset?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And even though I adore my animals, I actually thought, do I have the right to be this upset about an animal when the world is going mad? You know? And I think so it is worth saying to people, you do have the right to your grief for your pet.
That's right. Oh my gosh. You've just hit on some really important points. I think first off, grief is patient. And so it could hit you right away or a year later or 2 years later. It is interesting to hear you say having a puppy for us, our new puppy Campbell, I didn't also realize how much I'm like, oh, Kingston used to do that. Or, you know, and then I'm having these moments of crying, but now I've learned to really honor my feelings and that I am allowed to have this pain and I am allowed to grieve because this is a real relationship that you had and there was real love that is there. And, you know, one of the things that I learned in therapy is this idea of you do need to validate yourself and your feelings and give yourself permission to have the grief and also honor how you're feeling, even if the world is what it is, right? The world is heavy right now. I can acknowledge that. But the world has been heavy for a long time, right? We've had always, I think, generations of different things that are happening. But you still have to care for yourself as a human being and make sure that you are doing okay. And part of that is validating your feelings and getting the support that you need, whether it's leaning on your family or friends or going to your doctor or just allowing the tears to fall and process the grief.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So saying that, how do we start the conversation to include pet bereavement in corporate policies?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the work that I've been doing has been in writing in magazines, being on the TV news shows, and really starting to bring it back to unmanaged grief in the workplace, at least here in the United States, costs companies every single year $200 billion.
Wow.
$200 billion every year. And so what I'm not looking for a government mandate. I don't think government should tell us how to run our businesses. I'm a business owner myself. Instead, I think we as employers have to step up and do the right thing. I think this new generation of employees and workforce, they're looking for employers to recognize them as human beings. And that means you have to know that they have lives outside of work. And then when things happen outside of work, it's of course going to impact them at work. And the relationship that you have with your animals can be one of the strongest that you have in your life, in your, right? I mean, ours sleep in our bed, right? My husband and I don't know how you get closer than that, but you see them every single day. And it is just always interesting to me as I think about, you know, if an employee were to call and say, my brother, my sister, someone passed in their life, that everyone can seem to get on board and say, I understand that. And that's somebody that they're not seeing every single day, that they're not caring for their well-being every day. They have doctor's appointments, food, schedules, routines, all of these things, right? Their whole life just changed, that there has to be some acknowledgement for that. And so for me, it's for the employer, right? There's this idea around culture, which I don't think is a buzzword. I think it's critical for success. And that means that your employees have to feel like you care about them. But if you don't want to go down that path, if that feels too hard, then I think talk about the numbers. Economically, it has been shown, studies have shown companies who have compassionate policies like pet bereavement leave actually have happier employees and higher retention rates. So when you just bring it down to the dollar, $200 billion of cost in unmanaged grief. And also if you have to replace an employee, there's also data that shows it costs 3 to 4 times the salary position that you're backfilling for. So what a beautiful way that you, instead of, you know, having the cost economic impact happen, you could show up for somebody in such a hard time as an employer and also seek the reap the benefits from an economic standpoint too.
Yeah. Yeah. See, one of the things I love about you is it's coming from an authentic place. And I love that. I mean, although I'm very sorry, it was so hard for you. And as you say, you had those instincts already, but having gone through it yourself, yeah, you knew you were on the right track. Yeah. And I mean, you must be wonderful to work for because you create, well, I read you and it said you create an environment where authenticity and vulnerability are celebrated, an approach known as the Erica effect. I love that. So how, I mean, you obviously do, you talk the talk, but you walk the walk as well, don't you? Okay. So you do foster a culture of meaningful connections at work. I'm reading this, but you know, it is, I'm reading it because I want to get the terms right. But you do create that in your own workforce, well, for your own workforce, don't you?
I do. I think it's important, you know, for us, we have a document that's called Moments That Matter. And these are the meetings that we have with our employees. So whether it's a team meeting or it's one-on-ones with your boss or it's our all company meetings, I take a lot of time and intention in humanizing the things that we do at work. And so instead of just saying, oh, there's staff meetings, which I'm not a fan of the word staff. I always use the word team, but also in these meetings are moments that we get together as a team that really matter in the work that we're doing as a team. And so I think, you know, one-on-ones, for example, are the very first meetings that usually get cut or they get rescheduled or whatever it might be. And so for us, it's required that you are to have a one-on-one with your direct reports every single week. And it just matters to understand how they're doing, what's something that they're working on that they're proud of, what's something that was really frustrating that could have gone better. And you might find out adding a second monitor could have changed their whole experience at work. I mean, these are little things that you're figuring out and you're keeping a pulse on the culture of your company by something that seems so simple that we just seem to, you know, brush off and overcomplicate.
Yeah. Yeah. But you're so right. And the other thing I was thinking is, I don't know about you, but when I'm doing an interview, often, because my penultimate question is usually, is there anything else you'd like to say? And people almost always go, no, except, and then often they will come out with something that is great. I'm so glad I asked that. So, and that will be coming up. But, and I'm just wondering, is it the same with your one-to-ones that, you know, you've had maybe the formal part of that meeting and then you sort of, you're just chatting on, or they're on the way out and they go, oh, just one more thing kind of thing. And then something comes out that was actually really, really important, but maybe difficult to say.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we actually start with the personal part first, where we're like, how was your weekend? And we train our managers, like, don't just ask the questions, but really listen to what they're saying. Get to know your direct reports, your team. This is how you build trust. This is how you identify the right people for the right projects and what might be the best fit for them and really get to care about them. But then in return, they're also feeling like my boss has my back and, you know, I want to be here. So yeah, I mean, I think it's so important for us in our one-on-ones that it's about the experience at work. It's about the personal side of it. And then anything that has to do with the project goes into a different meeting where we have our project team meetings or our status updates so that the whole team gets to hear it too. But again, it goes back to the structure and taking the time to train your employees to operate in this culture.
Yeah. Wonderful. Wonderful. So you love this subject so much. Obviously, you've written a book, Pets a Family. So tell me about your book.
I would love to. I felt compelled to write the book after losing Kingston and then also going through Edmund's cancer battle. My dogs happen to have an Instagram account and they have like 40,000 followers. So for myself, you know, it'd be 2 o'clock in the morning and I'm grieving. And I always had somebody who was commenting or in my, you know, direct messages. I felt so supported in my grief that now I truly just feel a responsibility to advocate for others to have access to either their friends and family understanding this hard, and also their employee structure to have bereavement leave and be able to take the time off. And so that's really what the book is about. It's really for someone who is grieving to be seen, heard. You're not broken. There's nothing wrong with you. This is actually very normal. And I believe the pain you feel is just a further validation of how deep the love is. And then also for those who don't understand, who've maybe never had a pet before, I invite you into my life. And I say, come along this journey. And I think by the end of it, I can say, these are my kids without this prerequisite of fur. Before it. But the last part of my book, part 5, is all of the resources. And so if you're grieving right now and you're like, I cannot possibly read a book right now. I just need, there's like text messages to send friends of asking for help. There's emails to reintroduce yourself back into work. There's a lot of resources just for somebody who's grieving their animal. And then there's also resources for friends and family who are like, I don't get it. I don't know what to do, but I want to show them that I care about them. And so I have gift ideas. I have text messages. It doesn't always require dollars. It can just be sending them a text message to say, I know you lost Kingston and I know this is really hard for you and I might not be able to understand, but I'm here for you and you don't have to reply. Like even that, saying their animal's name and just honoring their life can mean so much.
Yeah. Yeah. I often, you know, I'll comment if I see a post saying somebody's lost their dog or cat or whatever the pet is. Obviously I comment on that. And then I often will go and message them. And sometimes I'll just send a heart, well, three heart emojis, you know, and just to say, I'm thinking of you. I don't know what your experience is, because that's another thing, you know, I know what you're going through. Well, you don't really. And so I tend not to say that because I don't know you that well. I don't know your dog that well. You know, I can guess. Well, I know you're going through pain, but your experience might not be my experience. So, but I mean, it is important, isn't it, to reach out in some way, whether that's verbal or just an emoji or whatever. But as you say, just to show I'm here, I'm supporting you, you're not on your own. Because I think that's another thing. It's a very isolating thing to grieve your dog. So just reach out. I mean, what would you say if you work with someone who's lost their pet? It's better to say, to try to connect, isn't it, than to ignore it.
100%. I think you can never go wrong with something that comes from true, authentic caring for somebody else. And even if it is just a heart emoji or I'm thinking about you or don't worry about work, we've got it covered. I know this is hard for you. Any of those messages can mean a lot to somebody. And it is isolating because even for myself, I had pet bereavement leave in my corporate policy. I have a dog social media account. Everybody in my life knows that these are my children. And I myself still wondered, is something wrong with me? Like, is this okay? I mean, it's just, and I recognize that the support that I had isn't the norm. And so I cannot imagine what it would feel like for somebody else who isn't sitting in my position as a CEO and owner of my company that actually feels compelled that they do have to go back to work and that they do have to be there. So any type of support, any type of text message, any type of acknowledgement to somebody going through losing their animal it can mean a lot for the rest of their life that you showed up for them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as well as just time off. Sometimes once you are back in the swing of things, as we were saying, it just hits you. Something unexpectedly triggers that grief again. And, you know, it can be, you know, a memory on Facebook came up or whatever it is. And I guess sometimes it's just acknowledging, I just need, you know, a few minutes, go off, have a cry, come back, and then I can carry on with the day. So give me that, you know.
I talk about that in my interviews too, when I talk about employers. I recognize that it's not always feasible to be able to give a full day off work for, you know, grieving of an animal or even any family member. Not all of the companies here in the US offer bereavement leave at all, even for humans. So I recognize there's different industries, there's different roles. However, the way that you interact with your employee and your colleague goes a long way. And to me, it's just making it okay for them to feel it's safe to say, I'm not doing okay. And I'm here and I'm trying and I'm doing my best. But how can we reprioritize tasks so that they can keep their head above water? How can we help them just readjust for this moment in time that they're having? And I think that benefits not only them, their manager, but the company's reputation as a whole, but also the quality of the work that is happening. It's truly mutually beneficial for everyone to show up for each other in this time. And I think for the person who's grieving, I write about that in part 5 too, of as you're coming back to work, how to talk to your manager. Here's the types of things that you could be saying to try to create some breathing room. Even if you are an hourly employee at a grocery store and you are responsible for the cashier, if you are a smoker, smokers get 15-minute breaks or they, right? Like there's other things. And so to the employer and to the employee, I think it's just about putting on this the hat of empathy to say, what what could we be doing? And as a manager, checking in on them and saying, do you need to go take for a walk? Do you need to go outside for 15 minutes and then come back in? And just the checking in, that employee might say, no, I'm actually doing okay today. But just you asking makes them feel like, but I'm supported.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess whether you're the employee or the employer, be brave and make that connection, you know, say something and say, is there anything I could do? Or is there any way you could help me? Whichever way around it is, but just start the conversation.
I love that. It is bravery and being courageous enough to be vulnerable. That was for myself when I put my book out there. I was like, oh my gosh, my whole life is about to go out into the world. And you never know how you'll be received and you'll never know what someone might say or think about you. But it's really you matter and you're important enough to be brave enough to just say it.
Yeah.
Say how you're feeling. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a really important area. And I often talk, my other joke is I always say that it's never long before I start talking poo, but you know, dog poo. But I know. But I do talk about dog grief a lot, and I do think it is important. And because you are, when you are going through it yourself, you're vulnerable and you're not in a place where you can easily stand up for yourself. So I think that it is an important area to talk about. Just to lighten the mood for a little bit, tell me some more about your puppy.
My new puppy, Campbell.
Yeah.
Oh, he has little shark teeth. That's for
sure.
Yes.
Yeah. I feel you. Oh,
but it's actually been really fun having him around and chasing his tail and all of the puppy energy. It's really livening the whole house. I talked about that too. After we lost Kingston, you know, we still had Edmund, Mishka, and Teddy. And they looked to my husband and I around like, how are they grieving? And your animals grieve as well.
Yeah.
But I think taking them on walks and us taking them to go get ice cream, and we did that after we realized we needed to do that after we lost Kingston, and slowly remind ourselves what joy and happiness feels like. You have to, you know, bring that back for yourself as you're grieving. But now with the puppy, oh my gosh, it is just, there's so much more laughter and just running around, and it's been really beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have to say, actually, yes, there has been a lot of laughter with we've got a Papillon puppy. So she's tiny, but my goodness, the trouble she causes is out of all proportion with her size.
Little tears.
And she's very confident and very clever. So we've had a lot of laughter. We have had a lot of tears, actually, because I was looking for what I'd had with Buddy, my Labrador, again, basically. And of course, puppies are little swines. They are wonderful, but they are horrible, you know? And I'd forgotten that. Although I knew it in my head, I didn't sort of know it emotionally. And that was a real shock for me in a process. And I sort of, as I say, I sort of cried a lot for Buddy. And it was a bit like, you're not Buddy. You're not nice because you bite me. And I think that's, you know, that's another thing that might stir things up for people. But I mean, grief is a process, isn't it? It's not going to go away easy. There's no easy fix, but we can make it easier for each other to live with it.
Yeah, I say a lot, grief is something to read up about and learn more about and allow yourself the time to cry and process. Something that also helped us is we created an altar for Kingston. So we have his ashes and some of his photos, and his leash is there. We also planted a tree in our backyard. Somebody gifted that to us, and we are not like the yard people. And so we waited like a week it was just sitting there, but I can't tell you, it was probably the first time my husband and I laughed as we were trying to put this tree in the yard. But something that was really meaningful is we made a donation to our local animal shelter in honor of Kingston's name. And knowing we were helping another animal because of the love we shared with our son just meant a lot. And so I think, you know, I'm offering that to anyone who's grieving, but also anyone who wants to support somebody else who's grieving, making a donation to a shelter in honor of their animal's name could mean a lot too. And it doesn't have to be a lot. It could be $25. It could be dog food. It could be anything. They need help.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that somebody's thinking about you as much as anything is that, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Lovely. Thank you. I think that's been, I've really enjoyed it, and I hope that's been really useful for a lot of people. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
I would say it's what you had said. Be brave enough to be vulnerable. And I think for me, with my story around Kingston, I know there's some of who are listening who might not understand the love of an animal, But I think there's a lot of things that happen to all of us within our lives that you don't always have to understand what somebody's going through or have been through it yourself, but you can still just love on them and say, I'm here for you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's brilliant. I think the other thing is, it doesn't matter what the animal was, you know, what species that the animal was. Right. If you have spent time, you know, I've cried for dogs and cats and rabbits and gerbils and guinea pigs and hamsters and goldfish and a quail, you know, and ducks. It's like you say, we spend so much of our time with them, you know, on a practical level, the time we spend with them day after day after day, they're here for us every day. And they do live in that place in our heart where we're responsible for them. So it's just any pet.
Yes.
You grieve them.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So I think the last thing I would say is I would love to hear from any of your listeners. My website is petsorfamily.info. I have the resources printed or as PDFs. So if you're like, I can't even read the book, I need something right now. But then my book is there too. And I would love to hear from anyone. And I hope someone out there feels validated in their feelings and that they know it's really just true love and allow yourself to grieve.
Such an important message. Many thanks to Erica for sharing her experience and for empowering people at a time when they're most vulnerable. We have all the relevant links on the Dogcast Radio site, dogcastradio.com. And if you're grieving right now, please know you're not alone. Get in touch with Erica or me, talk to friends, and it does become easier to live with, honestly. Sending love to you all.
You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Did you hear about the capybara who escaped from the zoo? It's not the first line of a joke. It happened right here in Shropshire, UK. And Cinnamon the capybara was on the loose for several days. I was fascinated to learn that my friend, behaviourist and expert pet trailer Rachel Rogers, was involved in the search for Cinnamon. By the way, Rachel is a fascinating woman with many strings to her bow, and I recommend you check out her Instagram. She's an enthusiastic wild swimmer and has two adorable dogs, one of whom we'll be hearing a lot more about later.
Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Julie. Lovely to catch up with you again.
Lovely to talk to you again. It's always brilliant. And you live such an exciting life. So many things that I see you post about. And I'm like, oh, I want to interview you about that. But I mean, this one, I saw the news. My phone told me that a capybara had escaped from a zoo. And I was like, oh, I'm so sorry about it. But also, that's really interesting. I wonder if I could, you know, if it was in our area, I'd go and look for it. And blow me down, it was in my area. It was in Telford from Who Zoo. And I didn't go and look for it, but you did, didn't you?
Yeah, it wasn't exactly how I thought I'd be spending my Wednesday last week. And I have to say, I'd totally forgotten, bless them. I booked in a new window cleaner to have a look around the house. And I totally forgot till I was about 10 minutes away from the zoo. And I thought, I better ring this poor man and tell him. And I thought, you're going to think this woman is throwing me the biggest lie ever. I said, but if you turn your news on, you'll see I'm not making this up.
Does sound like a real excuse. I can't be there. I've got to go and look for a capybara. That sounds like a really, really bad excuse, doesn't it? And dreamt up.
Yeah, and I was actually due to be working for Napo Pet Insurance at the time. I worked part-time for them as their head of training and behaviour. And so I'd messaged the boss to say, I don't suppose I could have the afternoon off to go and take my dog to look for this missing capybara. And he, bless them, because I've done work, you know, on scent work for them, he was just like, don't even need to ask, off you go. That is amazing. Keep us updated. Probably the best excuse anyone's ever given.
Yeah, it is amazing. So, I mean, Rico is the star of the show here, isn't he? So tell me about Rico.
Yeah, so Rico is, bless him, really meant to be retired pet trail dog, who I've had now for just over 9 years. He was rescued from the streets of Portugal, where he'd been captured and put in the kill pound over there. So when Rico first appeared in my life, it was in a way that I now tell all my customers not to get a dog, but I saw a picture of him on Facebook.
Yeah.
And I saw this, you know, post saying this tiny, adorable little, you know, 9-month-old dog was going to get put to sleep in 2 days' time if nobody paid to get him out of the pound. And it was on the run up to Christmas. And I just thought, you know, I haven't done like anything much for charity this year with my business. Let me just make a little donation, get this dog, because, you know, he's young, by all means, like everything that I read about him was temperament-wise was lovely. And I just thought, right, I'll do that. So I paid and he went into the donkey sanctuary over there. And they messaged me a bit later and they were like, we cannot find a home for this dog. Nobody wants him because he's a Heinz 57. You know, he's not a pedigree dog. We just can't get a home for him. And I don't know, it was one of those things, isn't it, where the stars just align. And I didn't have a pet at the time. I just got my own home with a garden. I was allowed to take a dog to work with me. And I kind of was like, well, why am I not taking this dog? So I did. And originally the plan was, let me just take him in, train him as a dog trainer, rehab him a bit, make him confident, and then send him on his merry way. And here we are, nearly 10 years. It'll be 10 years in March. Still have him. He's still here.
Bless him.
But yeah, he does, you know, we started man trailing originally just for fun. And then it kind of went down the lines of pet trailing, which is, I think, a little bit rarer in the UK. There's quite a few man trail type organizations. We started with pet trailing and then I kind of ended up making my entire career because I just loved it so much.
Yeah.
And he, bless him, has always come alongside with me, but usually looking for missing dogs. Not capybaras.
Not capybara. Oh, bless. And I think what's lovely is that not only do you and Rico love scent work, pet trailing, but you share that with other people, don't you? You help other people and their dogs find out about pet trailing.
Yeah, and I'm trying to do that more. So originally when I started kind of helping owners to do scent work, it was just through my company Nose to Trails. So just me teaching as many people as I could. And then just coming up to kind of 2 years ago, I teamed up with another lady who's in the Cheshire area who was doing something very similar to me. So she ran man trail classes. She trailed for a long time with her Staffy Scout. And the dog world, I'm sure you're well aware, can be quite divisive, can't it? People can kind of see each other as competition. And from the minute I met Marilyn, who's now my business partner, it just wasn't like that. You know, we just teamed up and we wanted this shared message of a sniffing dog is a happy dog. We want more dogs to engage in scent work just for the benefits for the individual dog. Yeah. And then when you add into that, you know, hopefully we can get more dogs out looking for missing pets. That's amazing. So we now run the Canine School of Trailing and we train other dog professionals, dog trainers, behaviorists, walkers who want to add that arm into their business to do what we do. Yeah. So we now have affiliated instructors all across the UK who are teaching dogs the same stuff that we are, which is fantastic because it means we can get more people doing this.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, let's stop and just talk about how good getting their nose working is for dogs, because you see agility and you see, you know, hoopers and all this kind of activity and fly ball, and it's very frenetic and on the go. And you can see that the dogs, well, I've always thought, oh, the dogs are having a wonderful time. And they probably are. But it's almost overstimulating sometimes, isn't it? Whereas scent work is totally different, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think for me, that's one of the key things, really, is if we look at what loads of us used to do, and certainly I've done it with dogs in the past, where we'll throw a ball for a dog to go and fetch it, that actually puts huge strain on their joints. So the kind of repetitive motion of going after the ball, the turning suddenly when it bounces at the end and they're trying to grab that ball, puts micro traumas through their joints. And sadly, both my dogs have arthritis. So I know that things like that are really detrimental to their kind of joint development and health. So for that side of things, it's, those kind of sports aren't great anyway. But also brain neurochemistry wise now as well, we know that it's basically like an addiction,
yes,
the way it changes what's going on in their brain. And I think we've probably all seen it, haven't we? That border collie where someone's got a ball flinger and they could sit for the full day and just throw the ball. And the collie would, like you say, look happy and be bringing it back.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily good for the dog. Yes, they are enjoying it. But in terms of your average pet dog that you want to be able to switch off, to be able to calm down, to be able to be that dog who comes to the coffee shop or go to the pub with you, those kind of things. Actually, they're not going to do that if they're wired and constantly waiting for that next fix of let me chase the ball. Whereas sniffing is how naturally dogs perceive the world. Their primary sense is smell. It's not sight like ours. And when they're sniffing, it lowers their heart rate, it lowers their blood pressure, and it releases dopamine in the brain, which has a calming effect. So actually, it has so many benefits for our dogs, and certainly the behavior cases I work with, that it's really, you know, the more dogs we can get sniffing, the better.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And also all that brain activity tires them out, but in a good, satisfied, sort of quiet, yeah, I'm ready for a nap now way, rather than a, yeah, I'm on top of the world, yeah, go way, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's funny you should say that, because actually when we were out the other day, we were searching for an hour and a half, 2 hours, somewhere in that time frame. And bless me, you know, he is getting older now. He is meant to be retired, but it's hard, you know, if you see these things to not offer when you know there's so few dogs that can do what he does. And he slept all night, bless him. We got home and he slept all day the next day, tired, sleeping. Because it really does, like, they're having to work really hard the whole time to process those smells and try and match them up and follow that trail. So, yeah, exhausting for them.
Yeah.
But in a good way.
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. I imagine it's really satisfying. So how do you trail a capybara?
Well, more to the point, how do you not? So much as I would love to claim that Rico found Cinnamon and he's the reason she's now safely back in the zoo, that sadly is not the case. Though I feel like I could have dined out on that forever, which would have been amazing.
Definitely.
Unfortunately, when we do trailing, the dogs that we train up, they scent discriminate. So they are trained to find a specific target odor. It's a bit different to some of the other organizations that perhaps will train a dog to find a person. So they're just looking for fresh scent or, you know, in the case of some of our dogs, dead bodies. Mm. And they're just looking for that smell, you know. What we teach dogs to do is match the item that we present to them, which is what we call the scent article, to where they can find that in the environment and follow that to the freshest version of that scent. Now, I was actually working down in London, introducing hundreds of dogs to the art of pet trailing over the weekend. So I was blissfully unaware that Cinnamon had gone missing. So she went missing on the Friday. I was working in London for Napo Pet Insurance, running the Big Wolf, massive dog event down there, getting dogs through this maze, totally unaware, came home still blissfully unaware. And then it was only on Wednesday morning where I saw capybara is missing. And I thought, oh, I'll do a little TikTok video and say, how cool would it be if Rico found this capybara? And I sent him a little message saying, look, I'm willing to try, but have you got a scent article from her? And actually, I think probably most zoos and animal collections would not have a true scent article of that individual animal that happens to go missing if they went missing. And obviously, we hope animals aren't going missing from zoos all the time. But what we need is something that smells of that unique animal, because the scent that they follow is made up of their DNA, what food they eat. In the case of a human, perfumes, hand wash, all of those things make your unique scent picture. And we didn't have that for Cinnamon because she went missing on the Friday. It was the Wednesday when I contacted them, and it was Wednesday afternoon when we went out to look for her. And she lives in an enclosure with her mum, her dad, and her brother. And they will presumably have cleaned since Friday and did not. And even if they hadn't, you know, let's say they had some poo, capybara poo, we wouldn't know it was definitely Cinnamon's. Because they don't stand around watching, do they, in a zoo to work out which capybara has pooed just in case somebody goes missing. So they didn't have a proper scent article for Rico. And I appreciate it may sound like I'm making excuses for why he didn't find her, but he is trained to find that unique animal. Yeah. And we don't know whose capybara poo we gave him. All we gave him was a bag of capybara poo with some of their bedding in that they picked up. So I did explain kind of the process of how trailing works to the staff at the zoo before we started. And I said, there is actually every possibility that Rico could sniff the capybara poo and take us back into the zoo and say it was that one and point at the mum, the dad, or the brother. You know, he could easily have done that and he would have been right. He wouldn't have been wrong to do that.
Yeah.
But what was interesting was before we start a search, we do what we call a perimeter. So we go to the last known location of the missing animal, usually a dog, where you get a sighting. But what happens is people are not reliable with the information that they give. People want to help and they'll say, I saw the missing dog there at 10 o'clock on Tuesday night. Or in this case, I saw the missing capybara at 10 o'clock on Tuesday night. But they're never really accurate and you can't always be 100% sure. You know, could it have been a fox in the dark and they saw something big and dark and they thought it was? you just don't know. No. People well-meaningly try to help and it's not always. So you can't go to an exact location, give Rico the scent article and tell him, you know, this is definitely where it is. What we do instead is we take him around kind of the circumference of where the animal supposedly has been seen. And he does that on his normal lead. He just gets to kind of go around and sniff. And that is freelance. So it's in his own time. And Rico truly milked that. Last week, he was having a roll in the long grass. He went to the toilet, you know, all in his time, which, you know, we're not meant to hurry. And it was just, you know, for him to work out and smell all of that area. And the reason we do that is we know that dogs can form memories on scent. So then what we do is we go into the middle of that kind of circle area that I've drawn with Rico when he's walked around. We get him ready to work. So for him, I put him on a long line. He gets a little uniform that he wears because that's basically his permission to pull and go out on the front of the lead. He doesn't do that normally, but as soon as his little work bandana goes on, he's, yes, I'm allowed to lead the way. And off he goes. And we present him with the bag of capybara poo. Now, in a normal trail, when that actually belongs to the missing animal, we should have conserved quite a lot of time and energy and effort for the dog because they can scent match. They sniff the thing that we've trained them to do. You know, and this is a process. This is a dog that has had a lot. You know, we're talking several years of training to do this. This isn't your average pet dog. And we present the scent article to him and he sniffs it and then goes, oh, I smelt that over there.
Yeah,
and he will then join and pick up the trail where he believes it was. So we've done that perimeter with him, got him ready to work and presented him with the scent article, expecting him to go off to the right because that is where they'd been led to believe the capybara was, where Cinnamon was. She'd been seen in this long grassy area. It would make total sense in terms of capybara behavior, I'm led to believe. Certainly not a capy expert. But Rico did not want to go there. So he shot off in the other direction, not where the keepers were expecting, not where I was expecting, but I trust my dog.
Yeah, completely. Absolutely.
So we followed him and it was interesting for me because obviously we've never trailed for a capybara before. We've also never trailed for a prey animal before. Typically we're trailing for a dog is what we choose to go out for. And when we're doing that, it was interesting for me, the keepers were saying, oh, this would make sense. You know, that, you know, this is, they would stick to kind of like a pathway rather than fighting their way through the undergrowth. It does make sense. So it was kind of reassuring to hear that rather than thinking, because Rico just sniffed hay and is now trying to find us some hay. You know, because I wasn't sure, you know, and I did kind of really, a lot of the time when we go out, there is high expectations from people. Yeah. And if someone's really lost a dog, you don't want people to be kind of, oh, you know, 100%, you know, your dog, trailing dog, is definitely going to find the missing dog. And it's really hard to manage those expectations. But the keepers were really realistic. And I said, look, you know, there is every chance he won't find the capybara. But for them, what would have been helpful and what I hope we helped with was narrowing down the area because they've been using drones, but where she was in like dense woodland. So actually, until she came out into patches of grass where they got the picture that you might have seen on social media, it's really hard because the drones can't fly in the dense woodland, but Rico can walk through dense woodland, being a tiny little Heinz 57. So he took us to a different area and it didn't matter how many times we were going, right, you know, we'll try again. He was going to the same area all the time, which was really interesting. He then found some poo, and whether or not it was definitely capybara poo, we don't really know. Some of the keepers thought yes, some of the keepers thought no. I'm not a capybara poo expert, but it may well have been. But, it, you know, helpful for them that we'd kind of, Rico was saying, you know, hot in this area. If you think like the hot or colder game, he was very much saying this area.
Yeah.
We have always, it was, compared to the weather we have today, Drew, really it was hot. You know, it was really hot.
Yeah.
And my dog's health has to always be my priority when we're out trailing. And he is old and I have to keep that in mind. I can't overwork him and I never, ever would. And we kind of had an enforced break anyway because where Rico wanted to go was kind of private farmland with a horse in.
Yeah.
We got permission to go in there. We went in there, but the horse clearly wasn't happy.
Yeah.
So it was really useful for me that I had additional bodies there because my focus has to be entirely on Rico. And they were like, you know, dealing with the horse, checking the horse was okay, keeping it away from us. But, you know, the horse very clearly wasn't comfortable with me and a dog in there. So I picked Rico up and we came out of that area. You know, they sent staff in to double check she hadn't gone into like the horse stable and stuff to seek out some shelter and things like that. And then we said, you know what, he's very clearly said this area rather than where we were thinking of trapping. We'll call it a day there. And I said to them, you know, if you find something definite, you know, cinnamon poo, or there'd been rumours that she'd gone in a garden and eaten some pears off a tree.
Oh, wow.
So if she had, if they found food that had been half eaten by her saliva would have been on it, her teeth would have been on it, that would then have given Rico the right scent article, a proper scent article, to allow him to do his job properly. So the way I left it with them on the Wednesday night was, you know, I'll take him home, we'll have a break. He needs to rest. Also, I needed to rest.
Yes,
I was quite tired. But Reeks really needed to rest. And if you find an appropriate scent article, you know, let me know. We can come back. It's not, you know, in my eyes, that's not a failure. We can easily go again. Quite often you have to. You know, it's about narrowing down and working together as a team. They had traps up, you know, they had cameras up to try and catch her moving around when people weren't there, you know, to get a good idea of where she was. And so I went home and I was quite happy with Rico, worked really hard when he didn't have a true scent article to work with.
Yeah.
And also felt like actually quite useful to know that he was saying it's not where you think it is. It's potentially somewhere else, which is good for them to know. And yeah, we were quite happy to go again. And then they made the decision that actually they weren't going to search again on the Thursday. They were going to give her a bit of time, see if she could kind of work her way into one of the traps for all the nice fruit that they'd left down to try and encourage her to go into one of the pens. And she did. She was back on the Friday and safely in the zoo. So we weren't needed again.
Yeah.
But I did kind of leave it as, can you get a scent article from all of your animals in case it happens again? Little glass jars, bit of capybara fur in every single one, mum, dad, cinnamon. And is it Churros brother? I think that's what his name is. And have all their names on jars. So if it ever happened again, and hopefully it doesn't, Rico could go out and do his job properly.
Yeah, bless him. Oh. But as you say, hopefully he helped and narrowed it down. And it's, you know, I mean, that's the thing. I've heard this before, that dogs will teach us things about where the animal has chosen to be, whether it's a lost animal or whether it's just you're studying that animal. Dogs will often open our eyes and go, well, actually, the animal has been here. You know, I'm telling you, and we learn so much about the animal's preferences from the dog, because they don't have our prejudices going in and thinking, well, I know the kind of habitat they like, actually. And the dog just goes and goes, I'll tell you where they are or where they've been, you know. Fascinating.
And it is funny, isn't it? Because you wouldn't think, you know, well, certainly I wouldn't think, oh, they'd be really interested in crossing a road and going to a garden, because you would just think that's dangerous. You know, human logic is you're not going to go there as an animal where you could get injured. But actually, if they've gone, I can smell food, they'll go where they need to go. So really interesting. And the nice thing for me, I think, quite often, because my dog is small, he only weighs 6.5 kilograms. He, you know, he doesn't look like your typical working dog. And I think people underestimate him. You know, people expect me to turn up with a German Shepherd or a Mallee or even a Labrador, you know, some kind of typical scent dog. Yeah. And then it's quite nice that they were relieved, the zoo staff, that he was a small, older boy, because actually she is a prey animal. And if you had a dog, say he had found exactly where she was, you don't necessarily know. I appreciate we temperament test dogs and the working dogs, and we should know, but it would still spook a prey animal like a capybara if a massive dog appeared and was like, it's there. You know, that could then cause the animal to run, which we have to be really cautious of in our lost dog cases as well, that actually if you tackle, and people sometimes well-meaningly offer to help look for missing pets with their own dog, and they've not necessarily had full training in it, and they can scare a missing animal and make them run, and that can then, you know, get them lost for longer, but it can also sadly lead them to making bad choices and running across busy roads.
And I mean, you have found lost dogs before, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, Rico is in theory retired. But we found one on the 8th of April this year. He went out to a collie that had been missing for 3 days in a storm. And he found that one.
Oh.
And in a way, annoyingly quickly, we were doing that perimeter search. We hadn't actually even presented the scent article. And he was saying, Mum, I think there's something under there. And I was like, can't possibly be. He's just overexcited because we've not been out on a search for ages. And sure enough, the collie was under the camper van where he said it was.
Wow.
Incredible. Blessings. And the family was so, so grateful. which was amazing. Aww. Yeah. Bless him.
Oh,
doesn't do bad for an old boy.
No. And as you say, for a small dog, I think you do wonderful work, you know, promoting the cause of small dogs, and that small dogs still have just as much brain as bigger dogs, don't they?
Yeah. And just as much reason to be allowed to sniff.
Yeah.
You know, I fully, you know, as well that small dogs, quite a lot of the time people forget they're a dog. Yeah. And that's the cause of a lot of the behavioural problems. We can get away with a lot more. We do a lot of things with small dogs that maybe we shouldn't. Or at least, you know, people will debate the rights and wrongs of whether you should pick them up and all of these things. Yeah. And actually, what was really lovely when I was down with Napo in London the other week, and we just had this free have a go at man trailing maze that they'd had custom made for me in the centre of King's Cross, which was incredible.
Oh, wow.
Because, you know, I could never afford that. They had it all set up, and we had myself and co-founder of the Canine School of Trailing, Marilyn, was there. And Becky, one of our instructors, who came all the way from Newcastle on Tyne down to London to help us get, and we got hundreds of dogs through, but they were all breeds that you weren't expecting. We had Italian Greyhounds. We had Pomeranians by the hundred in London, you know, not dogs that people expect to be doing it. And it was so lovely for their owners when they saw their dogs, you know, sniff this folded up piece of paper, and then found the missing person in the maze.
Aww.
And it's not, you know, they didn't do a course. They were given a 2-minute explanation from myself or one of the team, and their dog succeeded, which was just fantastic to see. Even the Chow Chow, who did lie down at the entrance of the maze, just to, whilst he had a massive audience of people. We had a huge queue at that point of about an hour's wait to have a go. And he just lay down at the front and was like, it's all about me. It was so funny. But he did do it. You know, he just needed a bit of a break, bless him.
Yeah. Well, you know, they're all, dogs are like people in a way that, you know, we all have different styles and different speeds and staminas and, you know, but they can do it, but you just have to do it, you know, take the lead from them, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for me, you know, I don't, every day, unfortunately, you get messages and inquiries through the website, or people tag me on social media. Can you go and look for this dog? Can you go and look for this cat? And I'd love to, I really would. But equally, Reeks is old and he does have a lot of health conditions. And I have to look at him and what we've been doing. And actually, is it right to deploy him in that moment? And if it's not, then I have to say no, which is really hard to say to people. But that's why we need more dogs to go through the training. So we have more dogs across the UK that we can send out to help people when they lose their pets.
Yeah.
But we can also only really help people if they get a scent article. So I always feel like I'm pleading with you to ask people to do homework. But if people can get a little jar and cut some fur of their dog, or, you know, if they've got a puppy like yours, if you happen to find a puppy tooth, keep the puppy tooth in a jar with their name on. Because if your dog happens to go missing, my dog or one of our team's dogs is going to be much more likely to succeed with that proper scent article. And if you say you don't have a scent article, and this is the case in most of the ones I've gone out to, people are then going to having to ask, you know, the lost dog's owner who's distressed and worried about their pet to go to their house and find the dog brush, pull the hair out of it. It's not a pure scent article. It's contaminated with everything in the kitchen or wherever it's been kept. So it would just make everybody's life. If we all just had little jars of our dog's fur or teeth or nail clippings or something like that, it would make it much easier and the higher chances of success.
And that is such good advice, because, you know, we hope our dogs will be safe, we hope they
hope you never ever need it.
But if you do, oh my goodness, you will really, really need it, won't you? You'll be so glad that you've got it. Absolutely.
I mean, I keep mine in my glove box in my car. I also have a set at home, because that's the other thing. Although we know, I think, believe statistically, last time I checked, pets are more likely to go missing from the home. So, you know, fence panel blows down in a storm like the weather we've got at the minute. People don't realize they let the dog into the garden. Dog runs off, spooked by the weather. But the times when I've been called out have been dogs that have gone missing on walks.
Mm.
So they're not in their own area.
Yeah.
You're not near your home. You're potentially on holiday. But if it's in the glove box of your car, it's there.
Yeah.
We've got it and we can use it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, if people would like to do some scent training and try and be, you know, be the dog that people can go to and sort of say, oh, help me find my lost dog, cat, whatever, or capybara, how can people find out more about the Canine School of Training and how they can train their dog?
Yeah, so we've got a team of instructors across the UK, and we've got some more due to finish at the end of this week, which is really exciting.
Excellent.
But so if they go to the caninescoolofTrailing.co.uk or just find the Canine School of Trailing on socials, you can get us on there.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, it's such a good activity to do with your dog. I really plan to do some. I'm just trying to get Diamond to sort of understand some commands. She's a lot better. You came out and helped me. I was like, Rachel, please help me, help me. And you came out and you were a behaviourist. It wasn't like a, can I interview you about, it wasn't that kind of thing. You're like, please, I'm a mess, help me. And you came out and helped us, and that was brilliant and so reassuring. So thank you ever so much. And she's getting quite nice some days. I can quite live with her some days.
But that's what it is, isn't it? It's an upward perfect trajectory like everybody believes you're going to get when you get a puppy. It is, in some cases, one step forward, two steps back. But they do get there. And the teenage stages management, it's so much about management.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know, I stood outside. And I want to say this because I want, you know, other puppy owners to sort of have heart. But I stood outside the class on Thursday night. And there were three of us standing there, and we all kind of came to the, I can't remember which one of us raised it, but I'd been thinking this during the week. And the kind of conversation was, if somebody had shown you in 6 months, like 4 months ago, and said, this is where you will be in 4 months' time, would you have had the dog? And we all actually went, no. No, that was, it was passing. It was passing. But you know, we've all had moments. I think we would have done, because we all went, yeah, but I love them. I adore them. I wouldn't be without them, but no, I wouldn't, you know. And it was a passing thing. Do you know what I mean? But you have moments where you go, oh my goodness, no, if somebody had shown me where I would be in 4 months' time, no, I wouldn't. Now, most of the time I would, but we all have moments where you go, oh my goodness, I wouldn't. Well, it's too late because you've signed up for it. So, you know, that's your dog and keep working. But do you know what I mean? It's tough, isn't it?
It is. Having a puppy is hard. And actually, Marilyn, my business partner, she took on a rescue pup earlier this year, a little sausage dog cross chihuahua. And, you know, she's a dog trainer. I'm a dog trainer. And both of us were like, this is hard. It is hard. I think, you know, it was lovely. She's documented that on all of her social media. And I think it's really nice for people to see that even people who do this as a job, who are the trained professionals, are tired when the puppy has them up at night. Yeah. We are fed up of cleaning up all those thousands of wheeze that happen at the house and all of those things. And it is hard work. And I puppy sat, well, animal sat for her recently. So there was the puppy, the staffy, and three cats. And I'll be honest, I was exhausted. Yeah. I had forgotten how easy I have it with my two elderly dogs.
Yes. Yes. No, in some ways you've got to go through it to get the dog that you want. Although obviously, you know, you can rescue an older dog and you can still, you know, work together and become a partnership and a team. And, you know, but do you know what I mean? You've got to go through that beginning days, early days to get to the good relationship, whatever the age they are when you take them on. But puppies, oh my goodness, can be wonderful, but horrible. Oh dear.
It is worth it in the end, definitely.
Oh, it is. It is. But I've actually thought this time, this is the first time I've ever thought, yeah, I don't think I want another puppy ever, you know, kind of thing. I'll get through it. But
will, and she'll be wonderful.
There you are. It's official. Diamond will be wonderful. And Rachel already is wonderful. And honestly, she was a lifesaver when she visited us and helped and reassured us. Thanks to Rachel for her time. And we have the link to the Canine School of Training on the Dogcast Radio site. All our podcasts, or 280 of them, can be found at our website, dogcastradio.com, and I've also recorded a more informal series called The Inane Ramblings of a Puppy Owner, which you can find on the Dogcast Radio YouTube, and you can also access it via any of our social media channels. That's it for now. Until next time, look after yourselves and your dogs. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. A lost dog wanders into a jungle. A lion sees the dog from a distance and says, "I never saw an animal of this kind before, but he looks tasty." So the lion starts rushing towards the dog with the intention of eating him. The dog notices and starts to panic, but as he's about to run, he spots some bones nearby and gets an idea and says loudly, "Mmm, that was some good lion meat." The lion abruptly stops and says, "Whoa, this guy seems tougher than he looks. I better leave while I can." Up in the trees, a monkey sees all this and hatches a plan to exploit the situation by telling the lion what's really going on and gaining influence with the king of the jungle. So the monkey proceeds to tell the lion what really happened, and the lion says angrily, "Get on my back, we'll get him together." They start rushing back to the dog, and the dog sees them. And being a clever dog, he works out what happened, and he starts to panic even more. He then gets another idea and says loudly, "Where the heck is that monkey? I told him to bring me another lion an hour ago."